Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz, and no, you're not suffering from deja vu. Monday night, a National Grid worker created a potentially dangerous situation in Woburn by allowing gas lines to overpressurize, just like what happened before the gas explosions in Merrimack Valley last month, though that was a different company, Columbia Gas. Fortunately, there were no injuries or property damage this time, but the state is not taking any chances. DPU, that's the Department of Public Utilities, told National Grid to discontinue new gas installations, except in emergency cases, at least until there's a full review of the incident. National Grid held a news conference in Woburn this afternoon. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman was there, and he joins me now. Bruce, good to see you.
You too, Evan.
So, it's been nearly 24 hours since the gas was shut off in Woburn. Tell me about what was said at today's event.
Well, it was a little unusual as these things go. First of all, it was taking place in a parking lot.
Classic parking lot meeting.
Yeah, news conference meeting. Well, for Route 93, National Grid had brought in about 200 replacement workers to fix this problem. They surrounded or semi-surrounded an area with huge trucks to block out union workers who were standing on the side. They were afraid they were going to intrude on this news conference. The president of National Grid of Massachusetts was there, and I spoke with her. Her name is Marcy Reed, and she said that National Grid takes full responsibility.
Yeah, we made a mistake, Bruce. We had a technician working routine maintenance in one of our regulator stations, and he made a mistake. The good news is that we have governance structures and controls in place in the event that some of those mistakes are made, because sadly they happen over time, that they're caught.
Yeah, she says that they're not very frequent. In fact, she couldn't remember when the last one was. But National Grid says it's going to reimburse everyone. The company says it's going to be paying people for what their expenses were. They need to present receipts. It's going to start pressurizing these pipes. I guess there are about 3 miles of them in this area. It's going to bring them up to about 2 pounds per square inch slowly, begin testing the lines. And then it's going to start turning on the gas for people beginning tomorrow and ending by Thursday.
So this might not resonate as much. We might not be here talking about it, except for what happened last month in Merrimack Valley, where the pressure inside those Columbia gas pipes was 12 times higher than normal,
right,
which caused explosions. People's homes were destroyed. People are displaced. People are still displaced, right?
Yeah.
An 18-year-old high school student was killed. So this overpressurization, is it something that's happening more and more? Is this a fluke of events, something to fear?
Well, again, Marcy Reed wouldn't say how the overpressurization happened. They've got an investigation that's going to begin once they kind of bring the gas back online. But she did say that overpressurization doesn't happen very often.
I would say it's not normal. Yes, we have had them. I couldn't tell you the last time it was, but they don't happen on a frequent basis by any stretch of the imagination.
I spoke with John Bonapane. He's the president of one of the gas workers unions that's locked out since the end of June. He was on the sidelines, and after the news conference today, he says that he couldn't remember there being an overpressurization problem. He thought maybe back in 2005, but he said, really, I've been around for 30 years doing this. I can't remember one of these happening.
We have jobs that have a lot of responsibility. They're dangerous jobs. And we know that because we've been doing them for a long time out in the field. And I don't think that National Grid really takes that as serious as they should. It's infuriating to see something like this happen when we know it could have been prevented if we were working.
Yeah, and they want to go back to work. They've been locked out, as I said, since the end of June. They've been talking and negotiating. The negotiations are ongoing. The next negotiation session is this Friday. But, boy, speaking to Bonapane, he does not sound optimistic right now about an outcome there.
Well, getting back to the community affected here, what do Woburn officials have to say? How are they feeling about it?
Well, at the news conference was Mayor Scott Galvin from Woburn. He said he appreciates the prompt and what he called the professional response by National Grid, and he's looking forward to this review of what happened on the accident. And Well, 30 cities and towns have voted, and this is interesting, 30 cities and towns have voted to prevent National Grid workers from doing new work in their towns. That goes back to the original lockout.
Since the lockout, you mean they voted?
Right. They've actually voted. Now, Woburn did not approve of preventing new work, but in they have kind of been observing it, so they're not allowing National Grid workers, replacement workers, to do that. But, you know, Woburn is a blue-collar town. It's a hard-working town. And James Dwyer, I spoke to him. He's a state rep. He actually lives on one of the streets where the gas was shut off. He said he was lucky because he wasn't affected. He has oil. But his daughter, who has got five kids, she lives down the street. She was. And Dwyer says it's time to bring the National Grid locked-out workers back.
It's better to have a full force on there for National Grid than it is to have part-time workers or somebody. I'm sure they have experience. But for safety purposes, when's the next problem going to happen?
And Dwyer said this is really alarming, considering what's been going on.
On the heels of what happened in Lawrence, North Andover, and Andover, it's a pretty troubling situation here. You know, it just exacerbates it a little bit for our citizens in the neighborhoods.
So gas should be restored in Woburn around Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get back to the Merrimack Valley explosions problem. What's the current status there? Are they moving forward? How are things going?
Well, they've mobilized a lot of people. They've got 800 workers, something like 200 crews. They're trying to install the pipes, plastic pipes, and replace them with the aging pipes that they've had there. Columbia Gas and the state have been rushing to install this new pipe and turn it on for the over 8,000 customers who are affected. That supposedly their deadline is November 19th. And, you know, Evan, well, National Grid is a public utility. It's overseen by TPU. They had nothing to do with what happened in Lawrence and North Andover and Andover. But, you know, getting back to Woburn, it's overseen by the DPU, as you said in the lead. And last night, the DPU issued a statement. And I've never seen a statement like this. They said they were ordering, quote, National Grid to impose a moratorium on all work, except for emergency and compliance work, across the company's entire service territory, pending the results of DPU's review of National Grid safety practices. That's unprecedented. I've never heard of that.
Unprecedented. It's like just real concern growing at the state level. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's WBUR senior correspondent Bruce Gellerman. Thanks so much, Bruce.
You're welcome, Evan.
I want to turn now to someone who can talk more about how we got ourselves into this situation. Robert Forent, distinguished university professor of history at UMass Lowell. Robert, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Robert, you were listening to the conversation I was just having with Bruce. One thing we kept coming back to is this lockout, right? And just so people understand, a strike is when workers refuse to go to work in the interests of a better bargaining position. A lockout is when the company prevents the workers from coming into work as part of until they can agree to some kind of contract. Is that unusual? Is it common? Is that a major factor? How do you see the lockout and this whole series of events?
Lockouts have become more frequent than they were, say, 10 to 15 years ago in the current economic climate with so much rhetoric in state houses and in Washington against unions. Companies feel more emboldened to use the lockout, which they didn't in the past. And so the idea is usually if a contract ran out, more often than not, workers and the company would say, okay, well, let's just simply continue with the agreement we have in place until we can reach a new agreement. Sometimes the workers would strike or threaten strike as leverage, but increasingly people would cooler heads would prevail. Obviously not in this particular instance.
And this lockout's been going on for months. And what's interesting about the events in Woburn is they seem like the fulfillment of a kind of risk that workers, locked out workers, have been pointing out all along. That is, gas company locks out workers, replaces them with non-union workers. The union says the replacements lack the necessary skills. And, well, is this evidence that they do, or is this just bad luck? I mean, how do you read this and what's going on in Woburn, what happened in Woburn, as it related to the lockout?
It's, to me, evidence that they're running on, National Grid is running on fumes in terms of trying to get work done by people who may have some sensibility about what they're doing but aren't the highly trained workers that the company has locked out. So having management people or office people who might have some familiarity with the technology and such is not the same as people who would have done the work, as the union spokesperson, the president of the union you had on before, said that you basically are gambling. And the problem with this is it's not making a handful of widgets in a factory where maybe there's some, you know, maybe there's somebody who's a replacement worker who makes a handful of, you know, bad fountain pens or whatever the case may be. In this case, a mistake could be catastrophic. This fortunately was not, but it shows the level, it shows the stakes and the level of possibility.
So do you think that strengthens the union's hand? Do you expect this to be a turning point in negotiations?
I think it should strengthen the union's hand so long as the people like the state representative who you spoke with and others who have some say and can raise the issue and could create some more moral imperative for National Grid to bring its workers back. But otherwise, I mean, it's remarkable to me how quiet people have been. I thought after what happened in Lawrence and Andover and North Andover that the state would move quickly to say to National Grid, before we have something similar, you need to fix this. And so it's also interesting to listen to Marcy Reed from National Grid, because she also said, quoting, I ran down the text from the press conference when I knew I was going to be speaking with you, she also said it was human error, mistakes happen, this could happen regardless of the workforce we have on the ground. And then she says it's not a rare event to have this happen. But she also said other times that this is really rare. So which is it?
I think it's kind of amazing that you would try to calm people by saying it's not a rare event.
Yeah, it's not a rare event. So, you know, even though we have replacement workers, well, you know, either way, these things happen. Seems to be a weird argument. But at the same time, nobody that you spoke with could remember back as far as, like, the early 2000s hearing of something like this. So, I mean, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, we don't have the skilled workers, but this could have happened anyway. And then, but it never happens, and then, but also, it's not a rare event.
Well, it's got to be one or the other.
It's too shaky for me. Yeah. I have gas, so I'm a little concerned.
So, one thing worth emphasizing, like, National Grid is in this weird space where it's preserving, or it's responsible for public safety, in a way, monitoring the gas lines. But it's also a private company, right? It's not a public company. So, DPU can enforce regulations against it. But it, in some ways, it may be beyond their purview to say, you know what, you need to negotiate with your workers. This is because we have specifically have an arrangement where we've outsourced this to a private company. They get to handle labor relations as an independent company. Does that sound right to you? Do you think
it yeah. doesn't? Your description is correct, but it doesn't sound right to me. So you're absolutely right that over the last couple of decades, more and more, these sorts of public, what had been thought of as public utilities, have been privatized. And in the privatization, workforces have been cut. And there's also now shareholders and other investors who want to return on their investments. And so increasingly, where it used to be that the state had more purview over what was going on, it's, you know, it's abstracted many more layers away from local control. I mean, years ago, in fact, some cities even own their water, their gas, and their electric. They were municipal companies that then got sold off because a municipality and or a state, you know, needed was a way to get revenue without having to raise taxes. But what you're also doing is mortgaging, in a way, control that you have over, you know, these fundamental assets, which are really monopolies. It's not as though somebody that's on the gas line can arbitrarily just find some other solution to their heat and or their electricity. I mean, you could put solar panels in and things like that, but it's not something you can do in the next 24 to 48 hours.
All right. That's what makes it such a interesting space, both from a regulatory perspective and from labor relations, that it's a private company, but they're not operating in an open market, and there are limits to what the state can do. Now, in the meantime, though, right, the DPU has stepped in to say, to put a moratorium on activities, mm-hmm. National Grid activities. That means, you know, business hook, like this is going to affect people in a very clear way, right? Businesses are going to struggle to get gas hookups. People who buy houses may struggle to get gas hookups in the meantime. I don't know how long this is going to last. can it last for a while? Is this the only leverage the state has over a private company? I mean,
the other lever that they had was regulating a price increase, a rate increase, and saying to them, you know, no rate increase. So you could do that. You could say you could do something like that. I mean, what's fascinating is in labor history, if it was the other way around, so there are numerous occasions in the labor history of the United States where workers would go out on strike and the company would go to the federal government and say, you know, this is a threat to national security, this is a threat to some aspect of our economy, and the federal government would order the workers back to work using very obscure labor laws to say this is a threat to public safety. Or so there was a big coal strike years ago when coal was something that everybody used for heating purposes, and the federal government thought nothing about going to workers who, you know, were out on strike, exercising their legal right to strike, to say, no, you have to go back to work. There have been a number of big steel strikes where the company will say, no, you have to go back to work, and they'll order what's called in labor history a cooling off period. You know, cooler heads prevail. Figure this out, you guys. We're watching.
So maybe this is where we're headed.
Hearing on that side.
Yeah, maybe this is where we're headed. If things continue to escalate, state interventions requiring workers to go back to work. That's historian Robert Forent, distinguished university professor at UMass Lowell. Thanks so much for joining us, Robert.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Evan Horowitz. This is Radio Boston.